Welcome back to the Minium Podcast. This is episode 3. Today I'm joined by Twinkie Towns and Brooks.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Doing well. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah, no problem. So, the way this is going to work is we're going to talk about a couple articles that I've found, and you read them because I sent them to you.
That's correct, I did.
And so last week when I was with TJ Gorsigner, we had a lot of audio issues and we were only able to record in like several different segments, and I had to edit them together so it sounded like it was coherent. So hopefully that doesn't happen this week, but if it does,
we'll roll with it.
We'll roll with it. All right, so first article. Sports Illustrated wrote something. I don't know who it was. I'm blanking on the name.
I believe it was Emma Baccalieri. I don't know how the
okay.
last name.
Yeah. But yeah, that okay. So she wrote, "What do the Twins need to do to compete in the AL Central in 2019?" And that's an interesting topic that I think we could spend a lot of time on.
We could definitely spend most of our time talking about this for sure. It's an interesting topic because there's a lot to unpack in that question. And a lot of it comes down to what does Cleveland need to do to lose the AL Central? Because for the last couple of years, obviously, they've had a pretty strong grip on it. But we've seen sort of an uncharacteristic offseason for a team who has a recent success rate in winning divisions in terms that they let a lot of their talent walk or be traded. So where they're at in terms of evaluating their own window, I think is an interesting conversation because depending on how much of a push they think they'll be able to make will play directly into how much we'll be able to do.
Yeah. And I don't know. I'm weirdly optimistic about this season. I don't know what it is.
I know. I always spend the off season after a disappointing season rationalizing. It's the Homer in me, just rationalizing all the different ways that things could magically go right for us. But I think so far so good in terms of what Cleveland has lost, because if you look at their team, they were a top three offense last year, they were a top three pitching staff. But then you look at some of the names that won't be on the roster next year. They've lost guys like Rajai Davis, Melky Cabrera, Encarnacion is gone. Lonnie Chisenhall is gone. And then two of the guys who really have defined their bullpen over this playoff run, Cody Allen and Andrew Miller, both of them are gone as well. So,
and I heard that Kluber might be going to the Reds.
Yeah, they've been shopping him around, I believe, for financial reasons. They've been shopping him, and I've even heard Bauer in some of the conversations. So as good as those numbers are and as good as that team was able to become under the direction of some of those big names, the more pieces you start to chip away at that core, the more you're sort of left wondering what the rest of those guys are going to be able to do, even though they do have a well-built squad with a lot of depth. Again, like I said, the more pieces you take away from that, the more questions you're left with going into the season.
And I wonder why, and I'm going to, in my AL Central preview episode that's coming up around spring training, I have someone from Let's Go Tribe joining me. And that might be a good question to ask them. But I wonder why is Cleveland suddenly shopping their best pieces around?
So how I look at it right now is that with the division being as wide open as it is, it might be a good of a year as any for Cleveland to sort of do a little retooling and restructuring of this squad. Because if you look at what they have on the books in terms of payroll, next season's team is going to look almost identical to what they field this season, because the only free agent who's guaranteed to have their contract expire at the end of the season is Leonis Martin. Everyone else is going to be coming back either because their contract is extended that long or because there's a club option that Cleveland could choose to exercise. So with no one really stepping up to fight them for first place, you can afford to an extent to sort of stand pat here, see where you're at, and then make moves to strengthen your squad next offseason when the picture is a little clearer about who your competition is going to be, what you need to do to get better. This team could very easily come right back and win another 95 games this year.
Yeah, and this is completely unscientific, but over the past several seasons, I've kind of noticed a pattern. You remember, the even year devil magic that the Giants...
San Francisco, yeah.
Yeah. The Twins have 2015, they had a winning record. 2016, they lost 103 games. 2017, another odd year, they won 85 games, mm-hmm. I think it was. And then they lost 84 in 2018. So maybe there's an odd year thing going
on. Yeah, maybe we... It's definitely going to be sort of a prove what you got year for this team, because if they do come out and improve upon last year's record, then you can start to see, well, maybe what we're doing with this kind of second wave of the rebuild that seems like it's been going on for 10 years, you can see where that's starting to lead. But if we falter again and are worse than we were last season, then some of those questions come up. It's like, well, how much of an overhaul do we really need to do? And is this sort of patchwork free agent job that we're doing last season and this season going to get us anywhere to help bridge the gap to the next wave of prospects? If maybe we find out that the current core that those prospects would be joining isn't even good enough to have a winning season with some veterans in the mix as well. So in terms of where the Twins are at, they've made a couple good moves this offseason in terms of signing Nelson Cruz, I think is an excellent free agent signing, one of their best in years.
Yeah, and we talked about that last week.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about the Nelson Cruz signing. And then we just, TJ and I just started talking about Williams Astudillo for 35 minutes.
You can definitely talk about him for a long time.
He's a special player.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Twins are trying to compete now, and I really think that's a good idea with Cleveland selling off some pieces.
I agree. I think if Cleveland has the confidence to stand pat and not really pay attention to the objects in the rearview mirror coming closer and closer to them in a season where Chicago is sort of the hot ticket heir apparent to the AL Central dynasty title, in that everyone's excited about them. They think Manny Machado might be coming there. They have a stacked farm system, but they're still needing a couple years most likely to see that vision through. Detroit's not doing anything next year. Kansas City's not doing anything next year. So for the time being, if the Twins want to make a push, even if it might not be an extended push, and even if in 2020 we go right back to 79, 80, 81 wins, there's still some merit in going for at least a playoff spot this year and trying to compete while we still have that opportunity in a relatively open field.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Manny Machado later.
Wonderful.
Because that's a really – if the White Sox get Manny Machado, oh, boy, this is a really different
conversation. Yeah, it brings some weight to the division in terms of free agent acquisitions that no one's really done in a while.
Yeah. And at first glance, when you look at the White Sox, you're like, why would Manny Machado go to the White Sox? But I mean, they've got an exciting team.
They do. It's they're sort of in a position that we thought we were in a couple of years ago, toward the end of the last general management regime, where we thought we were gonna burst upon the scene with all of these young guys. And by all accounts, they could absolutely do that. But there is still also that fear of, well, is Moncada going to pan out? Is Michael Kopech going to be brilliant? Is, Eloy Jimenez, are all these guys, Jose Abreu as a veteran, are these guys going to be able to take this team to the next level? And if you're Manny Machado, then that's something that you got to be banking on if you're considering signing there. But Also, he carries with him a lot of weight in that if he goes to the Chicago White Sox, you have a bunch of other free agents who might suddenly see that as a prime destination to take themselves, which improves the team in the
And
I don't
I mean Bryce Harper is another big name that's out there that's coming to some probably going to another team this year.
Yeah,
And
there's a lot of moving parts for sure with those two guys.
when either one of those guys sign, there's going to be a lot of talk on social media and any kind of there's going to be a lot of think pieces, basically.
Oh, definitely. There's going to be a lot of that, and there's also going to be a lot of those will be the two rocks that sort of begin the avalanche of the rest of the free agent acquisitions as we close into, under a month to go until pitchers and catchers start reporting. Someone's going to have to make a move. Somebody's going to have to finally decide that they're going to sign. And then maybe some teams you see like Cleveland, who haven't really done anything in terms of getting talent back, will get back into the mix and start making deals for players. And maybe what we're saying now about them standing pat and letting a lot of people go, that narrative might turn on its head a little bit once Harper and Machado are off the market and they decide, well, do we want to make a play for some other guys here?
Yeah, we're gonna have to listen back at this in like a month or two and see how accurate our analysis is. But yeah, I think the Twins have Nelson Cruz, they got CJ Cron, Ronald Torres also. So they've got some decent. They're making moves in the offseason,
They
which is
are.
not easy.
They are for sure. It's almost entirely offensive moves, which for, the pitching staff that we have, which is nowhere near the quality of Cleveland's, is it's definitely a counter to that. But if you look at sort of the projected lineup that we have going into this season with guys like, if you imagine in the ideal perfect utopian world where everyone performs to the best of their abilities, then a lineup with guys like Polanco, Crone, Rosario, Cruz, Scope, Sano, and Buxton still in the lineup, Max Kepler, Jason Castro, that's not a terrible lineup at all. And
I forgot about Jonathan Scope. I
yep,
don't know.
he's
I don't
coming
know.
too.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But those guys together could definitely make something happen in terms of being a run-scoring team, which was the reason why the 2017 Twins were able to make some noise and were able to sneak into the wild card because they had an offense that over the latter part of the summer just really clicked and wouldn't stop churning out runs, which is an interesting strategy because you have obviously Cleveland is a multifaceted team, but I would argue they're probably more known for their pitching than they are for their offense, even though that offense is volatile. So to come out and say, well, we're going to see if in all these head-to-head games, maybe our lineup can be better than some of your pitching. And already right there with that matchup, you have the potential to win a lot more of those head-to-head games.
Yeah, I mean, I just want a fun season. Like, I don't even care if they make the playoffs. I just want them to be competitive for, I mean, I obviously care if they make the playoffs, but if they're competitive and they like just miss out, if they're competitive all year, that would be much better than
Being out of the
last year.
conversation by the middle of the summer, not having too much
Yeah.
to play for
Right.
81 entire games, no, for sure. And also, I think this year will be interesting in terms of what the identity of this team is, because last season alone, losing Ryan Dozier off the team, losing Joe Mauer from the team, for this team to not really have a clear presence, a spokesman sort of for this franchise now. It's going to be interesting to see sort of who steps into that role and who becomes the new face of the Twins and whether or not that person is even on the team currently and whether that person is a guy like Royce Lewis. And we have to wait a couple of years before it really becomes his team because I don't think currently it's Buxton's team or Sano's team, as nice as that would be for by midway through the season for that to become the case. There isn't really a clear front runner contender for the guy that you think of now when you think of the Twins.
I think we're still waiting for Byron Buxton's like big year. You know what I mean?
I've seen a couple pieces too, in additions to the one that we read before this episode, where someone was saying that this is it. This is finally it. This is going to be Buxton's breakout year, and they, put in the clause that they were like, "I know I've said this every season for the last 5 seasons, but this is the one. This is going to be it." So it will be interesting to see how true that holds, and whether or not more starting time will be useful to his development, and whether or not maybe we already have seen the best he can be. That's hopefully not the case, but it's a possibility for sure. But again, I think in this year, which is kind of a prove it year, giving guys like Buxton and Sano as many major league at bats as you can should be a priority.
Yeah. And we talked about this last week. This team is so built around their core of youth that it's like as they go, the Twins also go.
Absolutely. I mean, that was the whole idea around, I want to say the last rebuild, but at times it still feels like we're in the middle of the rebuild. But the whole idea being that these guys were going to come up together and they were going to totally transform the team and sort of grab it by the horns and steer it into the playoffs. And when that doesn't happen right away, it's disappointing, and you can either cut your losses too quickly from that, or you can wait it out and have patience and have understanding that, yeah, maybe it's going to take a couple more miserable years, but maybe on the other side of that, you're going to be happy that you waited for those guys.
Yeah, and I mean, they kind of did things in 2017, but that really it but it's still we're still kind of waiting for like the this is it. This is what we were waiting for.
It's about consistency, really, at this point, in that we've seen them at their peak potential. We've seen Gold Glover Byron Buxton, and we've seen All-Star Miguel Sano. But for it to be more than a flash in a pan, for it to be something sustained, is really the next step for them and the level we need them to hit. Because if you don't get there, you can't rely on two of your nine starting hitters to be maybe guys and just wait guys and guys that you know they can be great when they're at peak form, but who rarely reach that level.
Because at some point they're going to be past the window.
Yeah, Buxton, who's 25 now, Miguel, who's getting closer and closer to 26, and these guys who we've been saying for years, that they're still young, and which they are. 25 is not by any means too old to
Old.
break out, but
Yeah.
the more years that go by, especially when you look at a team like Cleveland and their guys like Francisco Lindor feels like he's been in the league for a while now, and he's
He's,
younger, or he's barely older than Byron Buxton.
yeah, he seems like he's a seasoned veteran just because of how much he's been in. He has been so impactful for the Indians, and the Twins haven't gotten that from Buxton or Sano quite yet.
Not yet. And of course, you can't compare every single prospect that comes up through a system to guys like Lindor and Jose Ramirez. Ramirez, who's just 26 years old, just slightly older than Miguel Sano. But at the same time, if that's your whole plan behind your rebuild, and if you're relying on these guys to build around, then yeah, you kind of do have to expect that from them, which I think this year will be a good indicator of their future with the team. This is the last option year for both of them. They only have one left. So it's a matter of, well, if you can't show me what you got this season, there comes a point where you just can't afford to wait on them any longer. And maybe you have to go in a different direction and find a new free agent center fielder and call some people up to play third base, or try to work out a trade and just move on from that era of the Buxton and Sano savior squad.
But if they trade them, this always happens, I feel like. If they trade them, then they're gonna start to be really good for another team or
Well, yeah, that's
whatever.
how it works for us, isn't it?
Yeah, that's just the Twins' luck. It's how it's always been. Except, I honestly think that this year might be. I mean, this might be just my optimism, and I might regret this later, but I think this might be the year that they kind of start to come together.
It would be awesome. It certainly would, because I mean, like I said, when they are at the peak of their ability, they're both really incredible to watch. And a lot of this conversation feels like it's hammering home some talking points that we've been rehashing over and over and over for the last couple of years. But it's hard to have a conversation about can the Twins compete this year without them being the center of the conversation.
Right. And that comes back to the core of youth. It's the core of the team also. Like, we've spent so long trying to make sure that they are at their potential so that the whole team can be at its full potential. And yeah.
And then you can talk about, you know, that's just the offense. Like I was saying earlier, that could serve as the counter to Cleveland's more pitching forward staff. But then you look at the starting rotation for the Twins, and there's not a ton of star power going on. But now we do have Jose Berríos has flourished into an all-star, which is what we all hoped we would see out of him. And he's still, you know, he's not even 25 years old yet. He counts as much as a member of this young core as Buxton and Sano do. And he's actually someone who we have seen him grow and blossom into his maybe not full potential yet, but certainly potential enough to be happy with what he's been able to produce for us.
Yep. I wasn't even thinking when I thought of the core of youth initially, when we talked about that on the episode last week, I wasn't even thinking about Jose Berríos. I was thinking about Miguel Sano and Byron Buxton, because those are the two that haven't worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a lot easier to focus on the guys who haven't quite developed the way that he thought they would versus a guy like Berríos, who's been incredibly fun to watch. But once he's proven that he's good, it's sort of like, all right, well, that problem's taken care of. We have our number one homegrown young starter. Now we got to address what's not working. Another guy who's really interesting to think about as being a member of the young core is Adalberto Mejia, who is roughly the same age as Buxton and Sano. He's only 25, and he's most likely going to be in the starting rotation this year, primarily because he's out of options. But also, I think he's earned a look. I've been on the website. I've definitely been one of his more vocal supporters over these last couple of seasons, because I think he possesses interesting stuff and the ability to get guys out. His main downfall is his inability to pitch deep into ball games. His pitch count is pretty much run up to 90, it seems, every time we hit the fourth inning when he's on the mound. But he's a guy that, if he were to suddenly break out, that's a huge asset to have this young 25-year-old left-handed starter who's given you maybe a 350 ERA and serving as a nice number three or four guy rather than the number five he's probably penciled in to be right now for the team.
Yeah, it's interesting how I've been focusing on when we've been talking about the young players, mostly just focusing on the offense, but our pitching, young pitchers they have a lot of potential too.
They definitely do. And young pitching isn't really something that this team as a whole has right now. You have Berríos, who's 24. I mean, he is 25. The rest of the starting rotation is Odorizzi is really the only other quote-unquote young guy that we have at 28, because Gibson's 31 now, and Michael Pineda, who's as good as a free agent signing, really, from that contract we signed last offseason, is 30 years old now. And then you look down at the bullpen, and again, a lot of 28, 29, 30-year-old guys sitting down there, although we did just sign Perez, who's, I believe, 27.
That was today, wasn't it?
That was about an hour before we started recording. We signed Martin Perez, I believe is how you pronounce that, off of the Texas Rangers.
Because I know that you posted on the Slack room, we just signed a rejected Rangers.
Yeah, rejected Rangers starter is the first, my sort of gut reaction to that signing, because you look at some of his stats, and in 2016, he had 33 starts and had a 4.39 ERA. 2017, he had 32 starts and it bumped up to a 42. And then last season, he appeared in 22 games, but only 15 starts. He didn't even make it 100 innings. And his ERA sort of ballooned up to 6.22. And then he was let go by Texas. So he's a guy who I'm sure Thad Levine was familiar with, being that he was making the majority of his appearances right around the time that that transition was happening from Levine coming over from Texas to Minnesota. So maybe this is a guy that Levine thinks, well, we can turn him back into a decent starter, or maybe this is the time where, as Texas was doing, we might send him more in the relief pitching direction, because he is a lefty. He's 27. He really doesn't strike out a lot of people. He's got a career 5.46 K9, which is nothing special, especially for last year's team, who we finally start to see gravitate toward the side of more strikeouts than not. But again, you find with some of these guys that you're converting into relief pitchers that maybe their velocity gets a bump. Maybe this guy, if he's seen by hitters less, can actually become a decent asset. Or alternatively, maybe he'll flame out in spring training and never pitch an inning for the Twins.
Yeah, that could always happen too. Yeah, and they must see something in him that they like if they would have picked him up.
Yeah, I mean, it sort of reads like your prototypical depth signing right now, a quiet middle of January pickup to just give yourself some options for the season, because injuries are bound to happen and spring training performances might not go the way you thought they would. And it's always helpful, I think, to have more options than not, even if you're pretty sure about the guys that you have.
Yeah, and like we talked about I was reminded we talked about like how we talked about young pitchers and the Twins don't really have a lot of that. This is an aside, but whenever my mom sees a pitcher who is in his early 20s, she always exclaims, "That's a kid. That is a that's a That's a kid. That's crazy that they're doing that well." And it's kind of funny because like they're all older than me, obviously, and probably a lot of them are older than you, but it's just interesting, like you don't really think of them as kids, but a lot of them are like
Barely
a
out of
little
high
bit older
school and
than
just should be in college if they had normal careers, kind of guys.
right, yeah.
Yeah, it's
And
interesting because just quickly scrolling over the ages of these guys, as in terms of the projected roster for this season, the youngest guy on there would be Gabriel Moya, who's 24 years old. Which I do wonder how that compares to the average youngest guy in the major leagues per team. I wonder if there are some teams that, I mean, I know there are teams out there who are fielding guys who are, 22, 23 years old and already the star of the teams, but
Ronald Acuña and Juan Soto, they're
yeah,
like 20, they're
19, 20 years old making
19,
their debuts,
right?
winning the Rookie of the Year awards. Yep. So it is interesting that that's who our youngest guy is, even though we do consider this kind of the youth movement part of the Twins, but again, we do have prospects coming up again who will sort of reset that counter when, in terms of Lewis and Rooker and Kirilloff and those guys who will be coming up and making this team a little younger again.
Yeah, and it's just like there aren't in basketball, for example, they have the one and done. So you can have a 19-year-old starring on an NBA team. You can't have that in baseball.
It's pretty rare for sure. It's not something that we're seeing a lot of anymore. You used to see it more in, a few decades ago, back when the sort of rationale behind development and what the best idea was for making sure you got the most out of a player once he was passed through your system. It definitely does represent, I think, differences in just the organizational philosophies, with the fact that number one, you do have to have a player who has proven that he can be an asset to your major league team at the age of 19 and 20. But you also have to have a general management team who's okay with starting a guy's service clock when he's that young.
Yeah, it's like they have to have the players pass through the system, and that's why you don't see a lot of people coming up when they're like 19, 20, 21. Kyler Murray might change that. But if he chooses baseball.
Right.
It's kind of interesting because in college, I'm trying to think of any other sports that have the one and done rule, and there aren't any. So usually you won't get like super young players on most teams.
I mean, it's, yeah, it's a, with the way that baseball is sort of structured in terms of the disparity in talent between a single A guy and a guy in the major leagues, it's just safer to walk them up each level one by one individually. But then you can also ask the question of, well, what if you did sort of send these guys through a trial by fire? And what if you wanted to compete right now? So lo and behold, you start calling up some of these guys a little earlier than you might have originally scheduled them for. And how does that affect their development? Number one, because you don't want to screw up a guy who's on a good track. And then all of a sudden you send him into two levels higher than he's supposed to be at given the plan. And then he starts to struggle and lose some confidence, and then you got to burn an option year on him. But sometimes you also do get these stunning earlier than expected from performances from guys like Acuña and Soto, and all of a sudden your team is a little ahead of schedule because of that, and you can start making more moves to compete because you've accelerated the window a little bit and demanded a little more out of those guys.
Yeah, and I want to move on because we were going to talk about Machado for a little bit. And so Twins Daily, Cody Christie wrote a piece making a – if the Twins made a bid for Machado. Obviously, the Twins probably aren't going to sign Machado.
Most likely not. I would be incredibly surprised.
But hypothetically, if they did – he was talking about like what they would have to do. And I don't know that, like, the Twins probably aren't even thinking about getting Machado because they're just, they need to, one, they're going to need to spend a lot of money. And there's been some talk about the Twins payroll recently. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they have the payroll to get Machado.
Well, but having the payroll, having the funds available to get him, I think, and wanting to spend those funds are two different things for the Twins. I think probably any team or most teams in the big leagues, if they wanted a big ticket free agent like that, could spring for them. But again, that's sort of an organizational philosophy thing where different teams aren't going to want to go for those big free agent deals like that, which is not to say that it's a different conversation about just sort of generally in the league, how teams are more and more wary over these last couple of off seasons of handing out those huge contracts. But with a guy like Machado or a guy like Harper, you have not as much interest as one would expect a couple off seasons ago for that reason. And also because maybe these individual teams are just, they have different plans that don't include those guys, and it's not worth it to sort of restructure around a guy like that.
How old are Harper and Machado? Because I don't know that off the top of my head.
I believe that they are both right around 25, just like our guys are. Harper is 26, and Machado is 26 as well. So they're barely older than Buxton and Sano.
Harper has been in the league since he was like 19.
He was 19 too, yep.
And so it seems like he's been around forever, mm-hmm. and he has.
He has, yeah, but right, hitting is hitting free agency as he enters his prime years is probably why he's the big, even though his performance hasn't been consistent. That's
insane to think about, though, because he's been so good for so long and he's like still technically in his prime or maybe getting to that, like his peak.
Right, exactly. Because we talk about, you know, waiting for Sano and Buxton to break out. If they were to break out this year, imagine if Harper were to break out this year, what that would look like. We've already seen him come up with a 9-WAR season. And will he ever get back to those heights? Personally, I don't think so, just because I think that Harper's an above-average player who had one incredible season, but he could also prove me entirely wrong and go back to those heights every single year. Yeah.
And it's just weird to think about Bryce Harper still, it's just weird to think about Bryce Harper still possibly having a breakout season because it seems like he's already had that.
It does, but I also think that with sort of the narrative around him, if he were to have an MVP-type campaign again, it almost would be considered a breakout season, even though he's an established talent now, just because of sort of the peaks and valleys of his career so far and that he's proven to be, at his highest, one of the best players in the league, and at his lowest, a little disappointing.
Yeah, and Mike Trout's another one of those guys. He's not on the market, but he's just been around for so long and been so good for so long that it seems like he's already had his breakout, and he is old. He is as old as some people who haven't had their breakout yet.
Yeah, and that sort of goes back to how the development philosophy of a team and how long you have each player, each prospect spend in the minors and how you cycle them up through your system and how their actual performance once they get to the majors can be so wildly varying, which is why it's so hard to predict what to do with some of these players because there are so many different samples to gauge that off of. You can go the route of Washington or Atlanta and bring up a guy who looks like he's ready at 19, or you can go the slower but surer route where you test a guy out at AA and then you see what he's got at AAA and you leave him there for a little bit and then you bring him up. It really can come back to bite you either way. You can put a guy in the minor leagues for a little too long and overcook him and then wish you'd had him a season or two ago, or you can bring a guy up too early and then all of a sudden he's not what you thought he was going to be. And everyone's obviously trying to develop the next Mike Trout, the next Bryce Harper, but it's, as we've seen with Buxton and Sano again, it seems so hard to predict that there isn't really a good sound strategy for this. There's not a basic, well, if we do this, we'll probably get a good player out of him. That's just hard to accomplish.
Yeah, and it's a gamble, really. I mean, you're just kind of hoping that someone will break out. And the Twins have been banking on Sano and Buxton becoming these stars that we thought they were going to be for a very long time, and they still might be. And I think it's very possible that they will have their breakouts yet. But when you're banking on, yeah, maybe this will work out, it doesn't always end up well.
No, for sure. And sort of the inverse of that, signing a guy like Harper or Manny Machado, as we're talking about potentially coming to the Chicago White Sox, there's every possibility that a guy like him can unexpectedly flare out. And that, you know, if you go back to Cleveland, you look at a guy like Josh Donaldson, for example, who is 33 now, so on the wrong side of his prime years for sure, but a guy who at 31 was incredible for Toronto. At 32, had another excellent season, hit 33 homers, and then 2018, He's only playing in 52 games. He's still an above average hitter, but he's definitely declined from those huge peaks not one or two seasons ago. So you talk about a guy like Machado putting the White Sox back on the map for the time being. Maybe he only does have one or two good seasons left in him. And then maybe his prime years have already come and gone, which is obviously not what you're hoping for if you're Chicago, and not what you're expecting, certainly if you're any of these teams who were in on him, just because of how young he is. And he does have certainly a more consistent track record than Bryce Harper does. But it's another reason why baseball, being the unpredictable sport that it is you got to really make sure you have a lot of backup plans in place and a lot of depth in your organization, because one big Manny Machado signing is not a first place team going to make.
Right.
It can certainly help, though.
Yeah. And the Twins and the White Sox have a great farm system. The Twins have a great farm system. So there is kind of a depth in the system. But with the big league clubs, there's really not a lot of depth. I mean, there is depth now for the Twins, but maybe for the White Sox, if they don't get Machado, I wonder how well they're going to be able to do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think if Chicago does wind up coming away from this offseason with Manny Machado, he'll probably only place them as the third place team in the division. I still think whatever happens this year that we'll finish at least in second. And I think Chicago will still be a little bit behind us.
Yeah.
But Chicago right now, their third base situation being a guy like Yolmer Sanchez. Last year they had Matt Davidson get some at-bats at third base. So Manny Machado for them is kind of an instant upgrade at that position. It's somewhere you can just slap him down and say, okay, this is fixed for now. We don't have to worry about this. I think one of the many reasons why the Twins aren't really going to be involved in that conversation with Machado is because they already have a potential Manny Machado already penciled in for third base. It's just that he hasn't really proven that he can get to that level on a consistent basis, that he'll be that guy this year that he has been in the past. And for me, if I'm running the team, that's a deterrent for me to try to, as good of a player as that is, you can have an upgrade like that if everything goes right for not $200 million by just relying on the guy you already have.
Yeah, and it's interesting because Chicago's offering Manny Machado.
What was it, 175?
7 years.
7 years, 175 or something?
7 years is a long time. That's a big deal.
It is a big deal, and I think we forget, because of what these asking prices were rumored to be at the beginning of this offseason, that people were thinking, well, this is going to be the first $300 million contract, and Harper's going to get, you know, 12 years, $350 million, and Machado's going to get 10 years, $300. And now that those prices have sort of been walked down by teams being tentative and patient about giving guys that big of a deal, 7 years, you're absolutely right, is still a big investment in a free agent. And yeah, he's 26 now, but we're talking
he'll be 33
at the end of it. We're talking the Donaldson example. By the time he's 33, he's beginning to show signs of deterioration, and injuries can easily happen in that time span. And so what might look like a safe bet now could very easily swing in any number of directions, which is why you got to make sure that, again, you have a couple of plans for, well, what do we do if we spend all this money on this one guy and then he's out for half of the season? Who can we turn to? Who can we rely on?
Yeah, and that's kind of what I like about the offseason, is literally all of this is just speculation at this point. We really don't know how it's going to pan out.
Mm-hmm.
Makes for a good podcast.
It does.
It's just, of course, we'll see how things pan out. Like I wrote in my piece about Nelson Cruz that was almost a month ago now.
we don't know how any of this is going to work, so maybe these crazy takes that people have are all going to end up being right, or they're going to be wildly wrong, and we'll laugh about it in a year or so. And that's really what the off season is, people just making guesses about how things are going to go.
Yeah, it's really easy to speculate when there isn't anything actually happening, and when the entire baseball world and performances and injuries sort of become stagnant and nothing's changing for a few months over the winter, that it definitely does seem like everything becomes a safer bet and everything kind of becomes more predictable and, well, this is probably going to happen and this is smart because XYZ, but nothing's in motion right now. And as soon as we start playing games again, late February, early March, these players, they kind of become real again, and we get to see, here's what's actually happening versus these narratives that we've been concocting in our heads because we're bored.
Yeah, but even spring training is mostly guesswork because those games don't really count.
That's true as well.
And also, there are some probably going to be a lot of overreactions to things that happen in spring training when, like, 2017, when the Twins made the playoffs, they had a really bad spring training.
Yeah, it's always interesting because you have a lot of completely meaningless games in the spring, but you also have meaningful individual performances because roster spots are still won and lost based on your performance in March. And I think mostly it'll be the pitching spots. That sort of number five rotation slot and a couple of the last bullpen positions will be decided by how these guys gel with the team in spring training and then how our new manager likes these guys. So the shape of the roster definitely is not totally concrete yet, even though we have some good guesses for who our 25 are going to be coming back up north to Minnesota.
Yeah, I just like spring training because baseball is happening. And
it's back.
I like when baseball's happening. I don't know. Well, this is a good conversation, as I understand it, you probably have some things going on tonight, so I'm gonna let you go. Thanks for talking with me, and maybe I'll have you on again in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, and yeah, I hope to do this again sometime.
This is the longest episode we've had so far, and also there were absolutely no issues with the audio cutting out and having to start over or something. Like, we had to do that 10 times last week and twice in my first episode with Andrew. So we really lucked out today.
Well, I mean, hey, even more incentive to have me back then.
Oh, yeah. Maybe you're a good luck charm. Yep, that's the end of the episode. Hope everyone enjoyed it. And make sure to give feedback if you can think of anything. See you guys next week.